Hello, welcome to Books in the Biz, a podcast that looks at both the financial and operational sides of success. Please welcome our hosts, Dan Paulson and Richard Veltre. Dan is the CEO of Envision Development International, and he works with leaders to increase sales and profits through great cultures with solid operations. Rich is CEO of the Veltre Group and a financial strategist working with companies to manage their money more effectively. Now on to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Books in the Biz. Rich, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you, Dan?
I am doing great. Happy May Day to you. It is, as of this recording anyway, May 1st, 2025. Doing anything exciting for May Day? It's such a big holiday.
No.
No? Yeah. Much the same here. It's cold and rainy as typical Wisconsin weather. But anyway, let's get on to our subject today. So this one came about because of recent conversations we've had with people, and actually I'm hoping we maybe get some feedback in some of the chats on this. But bootstrapping. So in the old days, the way back, you know, several years ago, we would see many companies that would get an idea, they'd do some sort of proof of concept or proof of viability, and then they go out and raise a bunch of money. Then that would get them started on actually building the product, then they would raise a bunch more money, and then that would go on and they would continue raising money until eventually they were bought out by somebody else. We've kind of been talking with people that are doing a very minimalistic approach to raising capital and trying to more or less build it off of sales of product on their own. What's your experience with that?
Yeah, I'm seeing a little bit more of the return to the old, right? The olden days, people would start a business and run up a bunch of credit cards. I hate to say it that way. That's what they would do, right?
Pretty much.
And that's where that's why they started to use the words bootstrapping, right? Where they basically started, you know, you just basically pulled up your boots and see if you can get something started. And when you did, you could attract people using what you had built so far. So bootstrapping was to get you to the point where you could get interest from somebody else to put a bunch of money in, and now you have a viable company. We seem to go away from that a little bit, where everybody was focused on getting the money and not getting the bootstrapping done.
Right.
So there was a little bit of, you know, not sure of the time frame, but you know, you were able to get money a little bit cheaper for the longest time, right? And when money was a little cheaper, it became, hey, we can get people to invest and the risk is less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now things have changed and I'm expecting that we're going to hear more and more now where people have to go back to the bootstrapping. And I think that started a few years ago when you saw the VCs were basically hoarding cash. They were pulling back their money. They were not investing out. The activity was less. So the people you had to go to get more money, you know, they weren't around. You couldn't find them.
Right.
So,
you know, is that mainly just because lower rate of return on the money, you know, present value of money, if we look at it that way, if these VCs start making investments, they have to make exponentially more in order to justify the spend that they got to make due to the risks that they're taking, right?
Yeah. And I think a lot of the, it's kind of funny because I never really thought about it this way, you know, and maybe because I'm a little bit more accountant, a little less finance, it's kind of, you know, I think I just thought a little bit more about the hard numbers as opposed to the, you know, pie in the sky kind of finance numbers, the anticipated and the rates of returns and things like that. When you start to actually sit down and think about that, you know, everything's tied to interest rates, right? And interest rates, you know, my mortgage went from, you know, it was a 3% on my old house. It's a 7.5% on my new house. It's like, you know, it basically is a big difference, you know,
right,
the payments you have to make. So the money that you have to make to pay that bigger mortgage is different. You know, your focus is different. Your expectation is different. why am I not thinking about that same way when I think of VC funds, right? They're looking at it as if I go out and I have to get it, whether they get it from an investor or a bank, you know, they have a cost of capital. And they're going to lay out that cost of capital. And that means that they have to return that. And that means whatever they invest in has to give them that cost of capital, you know? So what is the effect on the people that are going to them and saying, hey, we need money. We're doing this project. They have to be evaluating it with, is it going to come back and give us a profit over what we have to pay out to get the capital?
Right. That adds up really quick, especially at today's interest rates. You know, we see a lot of that cost affecting everything now, and a lot of people pulling back on that. I'm taking a look at it from the operations perspective, and I guess what I'm seeing is, you know, in the old days, it used to be pretty darn sexy when you could get, you know, venture capital money or get people to invest in you. And you know, you talked about cash burn, and it was almost like a badge of honor to lose money month after month, year after year, until finally either somebody bought you out or something stuck and you hit it big. But the other side I see to this is control. So me as being the operations person, if I'm the business owner, the moment I hand over equity to somebody else, especially if that person is writing a fairly large check, I lose a lot of control over how I can do things, what I can do things. And I think you've experienced this as well. You know, the VC money or the PE guys will tell you, don't worry, you have full autonomy, this, that, the other thing. It's a lot different, though, when you're actually taking their money and now they're going, well, you need to cut things here, or you need to add things there, or we don't like that you're doing the product this way. Now you need to change it to something else. And, you know, it can upset your whole vision, if you will.
100%. And I think that'll kind of lead to something else that I'm thinking about for the conversation. But, you know, it's one thing. A long time ago, everybody was telling me about the use of a limited partnership, where you had one general partner and all these other limited partners, and the limited partners had no say in anything.
Right.
Because the GP runs the show.
Okay? Yeah.
I got news for you. Was an accountant for years, and I did tax returns for years for these LPs. And if an LP puts in a lot of money, don't expect them to be quiet. Don't expect them to be silent. Don't expect him to not show up and not have some degree of influence by just showing up at the meeting. You want to know the biggest influence he has? I want my money back.
Uh-huh.
Okay. How about you do what I ask, or I'm going to get my money out? And so when you start to think about that, you realize how much influence the money itself has.
Right.
Doesn't matter whether they have a vote. It doesn't matter whether they support what you do or not support what you do. If they want it done a certain way, the money will influence. Or if you're going to get to the point where you have to ask for more, you are in the position of, did I do what he asked the first time? Because if I didn't, he's not going to give you more. So, you know, that's a huge factor in what we're talking about. It's a huge factor in, can people just go out and ask for money? It's not as free-flowing and cheap as it was even 5 years ago.
Right.
Okay. And therefore, it's a more competitive landscape. You have to have something. So maybe you do have to go back to bootstrapping. And I feel bad for some of the people who kind of just, you know, I came out of school and I'm going to go do this because everybody told me I could. Well, 5 years ago when you went into school, that may have been the case. When you came out of school, you know, the world changed, you know, and it may change back again. It may become a little easier. It may, you know, there's a lot of things going on that we can talk about. But it really does become, you know, you have to become almost a thought leader as well. It's no longer, you know, you have to have an idea that people are interested in. Okay. And there's certain ideas that are available right now, right? If you're into green tech and you have something that, you know, you think can go somewhere, people will listen. If you have just normal tech that's new and fresh, okay, AI, right? you show up talking AI and people are going to come listen whether they think you have a real idea or not, but you have a shot because AI is the big buzzword. I think the other healthcare is still a buzzword. You know, it's still something to talk about.
That's a little bit harder market to hit, but yeah, there's a lot of desire in healthcare to improve.
Because everybody still remembers that tech had that boom, right? There's a chance that you could get in on something and you build it to a certain level because somebody gave you money and boom, it's so big that, you know, you're the next Google. But remember, Google had massive valuations and they had no sales.
Right.
You go back to
the beginning. As did Amazon.
You know, yeah, they just, you know, there was no profit in Amazon. It was a grow, keep going. And suddenly they were what they said they were, right?
Yep.
So now I think the big thing is, you know, it goes back a little bit to what do you know and what are you trying to sell? What are you trying to do? You're product specific at this point. On top of that, who do you know, right? It goes back a little bit to the friends and family. But I think if you knew other people who grew something and exited at a successful rate, they've now jumped into the other side of the table.
Right.
They've jumped in to be the next VCs. They've got the next funds. They've said, oh, I built LinkedIn. I don't know. That just came on the one that came in my head. But, you know, if they went over and got to the other side of the table and said, I'm going to invest in these other guys that are like me, those are the guys you hope you knew, you know,
right,
because they've got funds now that they've gone and built something new. And then there's the sector specific. Right, the people who have studied green tech for however long, and you're going to go to them and pitch something, and they're going to say, "We have more knowledge than you do," you know, or "Wow, that's a great idea that's going to fit right in." So it's 50-50, right? Because they already know what you're talking about. They're already looking to invest in these things. They don't want to actually do it. They want to put their money into it because they believe it's a good idea.
Yeah. Yep. And then they're hoping that within the next 3 to 5 years, they'll be able to cash out and make a multiple of that cash.
Right.
You know, most of the companies that probably listen to this or that we talk to anyway, have no desire to grow that way. You know, they're the manufacturing company. They're the mom and pop shop. I can't really say mom and pop shop, but they're, you know, manufacturing, their construction, logistics, some medical. They're looking to just build an enterprise that will support their lifestyle and hopefully provide them with retirement.
Right.
Now, as you pointed out, we're kind of in an economy where money is expensive, a lot more expensive than it was, as you point out, 5 years ago. What are some of the suggestions from a financial guy to say, okay, here's how you bootstrap what you're doing? So let's say you started a business a couple years ago. You're doing okay, but you want to grow. At the same point, you don't want to take out massive debt and go to a bank, because banks don't understand this type of financing. If you got a building, they'll finance that. They'll give you sometimes some operating capital, maybe to buy some new equipment. But when it comes to financing growth, most banks shy away from that because their underwriters can't measure it against anything, nor do they know how they're going to get their money back. So really, you do kind of have to roll up your sleeves and figure out how you're going to do it. So what do you do on a financial end to make that go?
Well, I'm going to say something that no one ever allows me to say.
Okay. It's your show, Rich.
Your accounting is incredibly important. If you don't know how your business is running, then you need to dig into that first. If you haven't started yet and you're just looking to start a business, invest something in making sure that that's set. You have no idea how many times I walk into a business and I say, show me your financials, and they hand me a profit and loss statement. Okay. I went to accounting school. Okay. And I would argue that there are, in an audited financial statement, there's 5 statements. And in any other statement, there should be at least 4. Okay. I can forgive you if you give me 3. All right. But if you know, the notes and everything that go behind the financials that explain everything are the 4th statement. Okay. So if I come in and ask you for financials and you don't give me a handwritten report about what's in the numbers, I can forgive that. okay, for what I'm looking for.
Right.
But if you can't give me a balance sheet, a P&L, and a cash flow statement for an existing operating business, go find out why you don't have those. Okay? Because every question I'm going to ask you has to do with all three, not just how you're doing. Okay? And the thing that I tend to tell people is make sure you dig hard, because I guarantee you, you will find extra money that you can use to build the business if you just investigate what you have. Okay? This pie in the sky, I'm going to go down the street and I'm going to make sure that that guy knows that I'm going to build this thing and he's going to put in millions of dollars on day one. Okay? So many companies fail at getting that funding. Okay? So all you're going to do is try to live off of whatever you have, and then pie in the sky is you get somebody to give you money. Okay? What else can you do with your existing financials? What else can you do that finds you money? Okay? Stupid little example. Do you know how many times somebody goes in and we start to ask what's in this account, and you find out they've got 9 different software subscriptions that have been on forever?
Yep.
That are just automatically charging to their credit card, and they don't know that they never canceled it. So I know that's not going to build you a factory, okay? But what else is going on in there if you didn't know about that? Like,
well, in some cases, that alone can still be free up $1,000 or more in cash flow each month.
Yeah.
I had a client that we started looking at the cash, and why was the cash going so quickly? Well, here he had all these subscriptions to stuff, including somehow he got some, you know, online games tied to it that were drawing out hundreds upon hundreds of dollars each month that he didn't know. He wasn't even playing the game. So it's just simple little stupid stuff like that that's easy to get caught up in if you're not paying attention to what's coming in and what's going out. Now, I will ask you this, because I often have to ask my clients, because they don't look at their financials enough, to get their financial statements from their accountant or give me what the accountant gives them each month, if they're still lucky enough to have an accountant that gives them monthly financial statements without asking. Most cases, I never see a cash flow statement in there. So I would forgive them, you know, if they could provide 2, the balance sheet and the profit and loss. To me, that's impressive, because a lot of them don't have the cash flow statements and they never see them.
Yeah. If you can give me a comparative balance sheet and a P&L, I can make my own cash flow statement.
Right.
Okay. I can do it back of the envelope. I can come up with a reasonable idea of why the cash is one way and why the profit is another, because they're not the same number.
Right.
And funny part is, you know, when you think about it, if you have an existing business, I realized, you know, the startup people just checked out on me 10 minutes ago. Right.
But this isn't sexy enough for them.
Yeah. The existing business people, you know, if you're telling me I can find a few hundred dollars, right, per month, bank loan, what's a bank loan going to cost you? Because it's over time.
Right.
So if you needed funds and you couldn't get it from a VC, can you get a decent rate and get something else started? Is there a way that you can get a prototype without having to bring in, you know, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars to get a proof of concept? I mean, that's the biggest risk I could ever think about.
Yeah.
Right? That you're getting VC money to do a proof of concept. And most of the times they want you to have the proof of concept before they even invest.
So, exactly.
So how can I get you a proof of concept so maybe you can get to phase 2 without already having the risk of I took somebody's money? Okay. So when I look at this, I'm looking at what else can I find in your financials? Can you cut down the point to the point where you have funds coming in that you can use to go ahead and, you know, pursue the idea that you have, you know? And that's the part that, you know, I think is important for people to understand, like understand where your real starting point is. And that way you can decide if it's worth going after the VC money. Do I have enough of an up ramp, or am I so emotionally invested I just think I do, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, I think that's why I'm kind of jumping into, you know, look at your accounting, make sure you understand the numbers that you actually have, make sure that this is a smart move for you, you know? are you killing your old business because the new business sounds like it's something that's sexier than the than the old business? You know, the old business is paying you. So, right. You know, don't kill it to go find something that you're not 100% sure about.
Exactly. Well, and another point to this that should be right up your alley too is budgeting. How many businesses do you know that perform a budget every fall, or, you know, before they're at least rolling into their new financial cycle, whatever that is? Most of them run calendar year. Yeah. But there's a lot of companies, a lot of businesses I walk through when we're explaining the financials. It's like, okay, let's do a budget. Well, how do you do that? Okay.
Well, now I know where we stand.
let's figure that out. You know, let's get together a spreadsheet. I've even gone through and created a spreadsheet that'll do some automatic calculations for them. Just enter these sales numbers, and based off of what you've done in the past, it will automatically fill up. Now, let's look at those numbers individually. Is that what you think you should be spending there? Or is that too much? Is that too little? What if you change this? So then I give them a second column where then they can change the dollar amount to see how that impacts the overall percentages off their revenue. So it doesn't have to be complicated, but it is something that if you take them through that exercise, they start getting more conscious about what they're spending their money on and where they're spending their money. And now they start asking questions, should I be spending my money on this? Or if I want to grow that, where can I take from elsewhere? What pots can I lower to get the money I need to get? That just doesn't happen that much. And I'm willing to bet you don't see a lot of budgeting or forecasting like that either.
No, the smaller the company, I think the fewer budgets that I see. Some of the owners have something in their head. Like they know they want to see 5 or 10% growth on the top line. It's rare that I get people who really understand the rest of the lines.
Right.
Like they're very much on, I'm growing if my revenue's growing. I'm growing if, you know, my profits should be growing, right? They kind of muddle that should be, name. You know, my profit's growing because my revenue's growing. And mechanically and mathematically, they should be right as long as nothing's changed in their expenses. Okay. So that's why I still challenge people all the time to do something as far as a budgeting goes, but go past the revenue. What do your expenses look like? Mm-hmm. Did you just go buy a bunch of equipment and suddenly your interest expense is out of the window? You know, and did you forget about that when you, you know, got it in your head that you should be growing and you bought this equipment because that should help you grow?
Yep.
I get it, but now your cash flow is to pay back the payments on that equipment. And you've got interest that's affecting your bottom line. So if you didn't think about that, that's the challenge we should go through. What else changed in your expenses? Okay. And the fastest way to do that is really set up a budget, which is an advanced look at what you think you're going to come out with at the end of the next year. So I've been even challenging some of the smaller guys to at least put down a revenue and an expense number and say, here's what I expect my profit to be next year.
Yep.
And if you can get that part, that's phase one. Then we can expand on that as we move to phase two. Because realistically, you take that phase one number, you get to the end of your first year and you compare it to how you actually did. And suddenly you've got a barometer for, oh, wow, I was really far off, wasn't I? Or, okay, I was spot on. My head's working just great. You know, so which one was it? You know, right. Are your numbers in your head good or are they bad? I would say it's probably more than 50% where people say, oh, my thought was off.
Yep.
You know, and so you start to get people really to buy into the fact that, okay, I need to start planning for this a little bit because I can't fly by the seat of my pants. I really have to, you know, I really have to have some degree of control over what I'm spending, which is the easier one to deal with than controlling who's going to buy from you next year.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, it's crazy. And, you know, a lot of this comes down to also maybe a little bit more patience too. We are in a habit now as society, which is what I think made getting the VC capital and stuff like that sexier because you could get that money right now. And again, it made you out to be maybe bigger than you appeared to be. I don't think there's anything wrong with, unless again, you're probably in technology or something where the change is so rapid, you almost have to seek that kind of investment to stay on top of it. But let's face it, most of us don't do that. We're in companies that are a little bit more steady, change is a little bit slower. We can take the time if we need to. You know, we can't take a ton of time, but as long as you're working and staying ahead of the curve, you don't need to solve the problem tomorrow. And I think that patience can go a long ways, because if you can be more resourceful on how you spend money, how you retain money, and you're not looking to borrow money, because anytime you borrow money is expensive, whether you borrow it from a bank or whether you borrow it from another person, not only do you have to pay back what you borrowed, you have to pay back that and then some interest over time. Yeah. So to me, if we can figure out how to minimize certain costs and get that work done, then that's going to be a lot better than just jumping in and finding the easy way out, which almost never, when you need money, is there an easy way out.
Exactly. You know, I think the other thing is to, you know, understand what business you want to go into. You know, is there a big CapEx here that is your barrier to entry? But, you know, once you have that, you've got an idea that nobody else has. That's the stuff that's interesting.
Yeah.
But, you know, I always laugh because I watched a lot of Shark Tank. And, you know, you always knew when somebody came in and said, I'm raising all this money and it's, you know, this crazy amount of money that I'm trying to actually raise. And then what are you going to do with the money? And they say marketing. And you lose the investment almost immediately because these guys are like, well, that's just a, you know, you're just basically asking me to put money in to just light it on fire, you know? And it's not always that way, right? Marketing right. could be a very important part of what you're trying to do, but do you have a thought in your head on what else can you do to market these products, you know, or whatever it is that you're trying to get the investment for, you know? Very rare does somebody say, I need to expand my factory, right? Or I need right. to expand into, you know, I need this other technology. I need this investment because it's going to buy me this, you know, software or hardware that's going to actually do things 10 times faster, you know, and get more product out. You know, it's rare that you would hear that.
Yeah.
You know? And when you do, usually there's people that their ears perk up because they're like, okay, this has a real need. The money will go into something that's actually physically going to be there, not just a year from now we spent it and it's gone and, you know.
And they're asking for more.
Yep.
Because the marketing machine is a never-ending funnel of cash, that's for sure.
Right.
Yep. Well, this has been good discussion, Rich. I hope somebody takes something away from this that you don't need to borrow a ton of money. In fact, you probably should avoid it in most cases. A little patience will go a long way, but this has been a good chat. So until next time, we'll let Bob take us out and we will talk to you next week. All right.
All right. Sounds good. Talk to you later, Dave.
Want to boost your sales and profits, but need the talent to help you grow? XCXO is a one-of-a-kind platform to find skilled fractional executives to help develop your team into a high-performance powerhouse. Fractional leadership is a great choice when you consider the average executive-level candidate can cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars in salaries, benefits, and incentives. XCXO finds you the executive and utilizes their talents to build your team's experience, all for a fraction of the cost of a full-time C-suite leader. Contact XCXO today to fill the gaps in your leadership team. Visit xcxo.net to